Jeff here. Thanks for listening. Go to playvolutionhq.com/ccbag or click the link in the show notes for the show's archives, ways to connect, ways to support the show, information about happy hour, and more. Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast, the world's longest running and most prolific early learning podcast. I'm Jeff Johnson. You kind of think of me as your early learning bartender. I'm here in upstairs studio in the snuggery along the Gulf of Mexico. With me from an undisclosed location that's kind of blurry, we got Sally. How you doing, Sally?
I'm doing all right, Jeff. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Except, like I told you before we got going, I had some transitions going on in my life that have been kind of painful for me. First, this pen is running out of ink.
Oh goodness! What do you do with a good pen out of ink?
I reach over here and I grab another one just like it but a different color. I looked it up. It's 2 years ago. This has got probably another 2 weeks in it. So it'll probably last for 2 years since Amazon delivered a pack of 8 of them. Tasha stole a couple colors she liked. So I think I've still, you know, if you can average 10 years out of a pen, I think I've still got pens for the next 10 years. I should be okay. But Mr. Blue is going to run out of ink here one of these days, and it's going to be time to move on. So I'm mourning about that. That's going to be tough. And then the other thing is I had to put a good friend down. My desktop computer was
you have me worried about the puppies. That's not okay.
When it's time to put the puppies down, I probably won't even mention it until I've got a new puppy. I'll be so broken up. No, the desktop, the studio computer here was starting to show its age. So I decided it was time to replace it before it just up and died on me. Then after the new one came and I unplugged and everything, I thought I'd had it for 5 or 6 years, but it was really closer to 9. The new one's a lot faster and reconfigured the I changed to 4 monitors instead of 3 here in the studio. And Sally, get this, added a battery backup.
Nice.
Yeah, because every once in a while when a thunderstorm rolls through here at the beach, the electricity gets a little bit wonky. I can lose power and still keep podcasting for about an hour on battery backup if that happens. So the podcasts are going to keep flowing, people. I'm just going to jot my notes down in a different color pen, I guess. So let's move on from the stuff nobody cares about to an actual topic. What are we talking about?
Well, I was looking at some topics that I was kind of playing with. And the one that really stuck with me was developmentally appropriate adults. What does it actually look like? What are we doing when we're talking to early childhood educators and their idea of what's developmentally appropriate for children and their expectation as adults? And how does that actually fit into the scheme of making sure we're creating the future?
What?
Well, think about it. I mean, it's so easy to say, oh, I'm following developmentally appropriate practice, and right now, this is what should be happening in my classroom for children. But I have no understanding of how to act my own age, nor be developmentally appropriate, but I'm going to enforce that upon children.
Okay. As a devil's advocate, isn't the way they're acting the developmentally appropriate for them, even if they're adults?
Absolutely. That's kind of my point. If we look at the whole picture, If we look at the idea that humans are ever evolving, ever learning, ever growing, and we put that in both realms, children and adults, we give a lot more space and grace to invite those who actually want to grow and want to learn and want to develop their teaching learning strategies. I've said it before in previous podcasts. I was that teacher that thought that worksheets were all you teach 3-year-olds. I still shame myself on a daily basis for it, but I didn't know better. That's all I knew was that's what children were expected to do, and I must rise to the occasion and make it happen. And developmentally, I was just following everything that I had been given. How do we approach this in a way where we're talking about approaching space, approaching age, approaching knowledge in a way that's just as appreciative to adults as we are to children? Yeah, sorry about that.
No, so okay, I like the kindness and grace thing to like a point. Because look, my experience is nobody really wants to change.
And why is
Maybe
that?
three people, maybe four people want to change. I mean, most people are pretty content the way they are, right?
Most
Or
people,
aren't they?
yes. I
Or
think when you're talking
they might
about
not be
those one, two,
content.
three people, you're probably talking about me. I'm somebody who's always, am I steadfast in my what's the word I'm looking for here? In my schedule, in my tendencies, yes. I am steadfast in those because that's how we survive as humans, right? But I'm always somebody who's like, oh, you got something new, you got something better, let's do it. So I am one of those people that's always open to growth. And I have found as an adult human that most people are not. Most people are comfortable sitting in that lizard brain, living in a place that they can know and expect what's going to happen next.
And
And that is why we have
I don't know
such
if
challenge.
I don't I don't know if comfortable is the right word sometimes, because they might be internally uncomfortable, but still change is scary enough and unknown enough that they get comfortable with that discomfort. But there should be a different word than comfortable to describe it. You know what I mean?
Safe.
Yeah, okay, there. Yeah, they
No, I'm still not comfortable
no,
with
it's not
that one
safety.
either.
Yeah. Huh.
Regimented.
Yeah.
If you give someone a clear guideline of how things are supposed to go, while comfortable might not be the word for it, it's very easy to say, okay, this is what I'm expected to do. Dot my I's, cross my T's. I've accomplished what's supposed to be accomplished, so I'm done.
Yeah,
There's no more
they're
expectation of
that
me.
structure. Even if they're not happy with the way things are, that structure is, it brings some content, some solace. I don't know. So most people aren't gonna change, and I mean, I'm totally including myself here. I've decided, look, I'm 55 fucking years old. I'm pretty much the way I'm gonna be for. I mean, I could get hit by a bus crossing the street to go to the beach tomorrow, or I could have another 50 years in me. But either way, I'm not gonna really evolve much. I might look. I've been trying to find some new hobbies, that kind of thing. But Jeff is pretty much who Jeff is gonna be, and I'm 100% comfortable with that. But it took a long time to get there. And Sally's looking at me right now like, oh, son, you got some changing you need to do.
Well, no, not that at all.
Kind of like
Actually,
blessed his heart.
I was going back to previous episodes that I've listened to where you talked about how, am I damaged? I can't cry. And in that statement, showing your desire for some form of not growth necessarily, but change. Like while humans are intrinsically motivated, while our internal desire is set on consistency, is set on, let me follow the path that's been given to me. This is the easiest route. Let's make sure we all survive, right? If we're going to go lizard brain route, that's how we are set up. But every single person I've ever encountered in my many years on this planet has been, yes, I like comfort. I like common. I like knowing where I am in my space. But what if? And they don't say it that way. You just have a conversation and they muse about something and there's just a little light sparkle in their eye. And just for a moment, they let go of the idea that this is the only thing that's going to be who they are.
Sure.
And in that moment, you find the beautiful piece of the magic that can easily grow. But then they're like, oh no, I'm just talking, I'm just saying things, I'm just dreaming outside of my box. And they immediately close the door. And so much of that is what frustrates me about how we approach early childhood and how we approach early childhood caregivers that we're asking to change their practice. We're asking to open the door. We're asking them to expand their reach and how they interact with children. But we're not looking at what's really happening is they're focused on safety, they're focused on comfort, they're focused on consistency. And the idea of stepping out of the box, just like we talked about in a podcast or two ago about chaos and stepping over the ledge, dipping your toe in the water. What does that look like? It's scary. I don't like it. How do we encourage those who don't even realize they have an out of the box idea that it's safe to do it?
Well, probably not the way I do it, by ranting and raving about how we should do the scary thing and then being a bombastic asshole about just about everything. That's probably not the right course. It's worked in a couple cases, but probably wide range, it's probably not a very effective course of action, I would guess. So what would be better options? Instead of loud and brash and bombastic.
That's a great question, Jeff. I am just as loud. And when I get on my soapbox and I get going, while I try to do everything I can to leave space for those who are just on the outside looking in and just trying to decide if this is something that's comfortable for them, I do have a tendency to kind of steamroll my idea into things. But if I'm really wanting to make a difference, if I'm really, really wanting to make an impact, I guess what I would say is when we're looking at the idea that you're only as good as you've been, it's such a hold back on growth and progress, just like it would be for a child. We have two very dichotomous schemes. It's either the baby's always a baby, and we're gonna cuddle and we're gonna love and we're gonna comfort, which are all things that are needed, but they continue to do it and they don't let independence and autonomy happen.
Sure.
Or kick them out the door, you got this, here's your worksheet. Right? There doesn't seem to be an in-between. The same happens for adults when we're looking at how they approach an early childhood setting or even an older childhood setting, which is something I am currently encompassed with. How do we look at educators and say, you have been just as disserviced as the children by being put in this expectation that you're either this or this?
So I don't know if we can do that, because I think that's a realization people have to come to on their own, really, because you can have outside other people's ideas and opinions about who you are and what you are and how you are who you are, bombarding you all day long. But until something until a switch flips inside of you, none of that means anything. Or
Ask her.
or not?
discussion on that?
Of course.
I've listened to your podcast for a long time. I haven't listened to all of them because
Yeah,
I
you're
work
on the
too
show.
much.
I mean, it's our podcast now,
It's
so
our podcast, but before I was a part of it, I listened
sure.
to your previous and you talked about not always being where you are now and your understanding of play-based learning and how integral it is to child development. What flipped the switch for you?
I don't know. I mean,
Okay.
I can't point to a like, oh, that did it. No, it's just it's been a journey. It's like any journey. There's, I don't think we have, I don't know, may, some people have epiphanies. I've never had that. You read something and it has an impact, and you experience something else, and you think, oh, and every once in a while you bump into an idea that is fresh and new to you, and maybe a person that presents it in a fresh or new idea, and then you grab little bits and pieces and you make progress and change. At least that's the way I think I did it.
Thank you for supporting my point. Everything that you did that adjusted your change was based on outside experience, right?
Well, I
You did
mean,
it.
everything we do, period, is based on outside experience, isn't it? But
Exactly.
the fact that change is made, that's an internal thing.
Yes. No, I 100% agree. It has to be internal, it has to be self-driven. Nobody's actually going to get to that next step without being internally driven, but the only way they get there is by being positive new ideas. You and Lisa Murphy had an episode just recently about the more knowledgeable other, right? And how that kind of
Well,
grows
look,
your
we didn't think
brains.
of it. Vygotsky thought of the idea, but yeah,
Well, of course.
we talked about it.
Yes, you talked about Vygotsky's theory that the more knowledgeable other grows your space in which you can learn, right? Because if you have that support of someone else who you're connected to showing you how something works, you can then become comfortable with it. So I guess my idea behind all of this by saying developmentally appropriate adults is not necessarily saying I'm telling everyone they need to change what they're doing and they need to, I mean, I have my own opinions about that. But if there's enough people who are willing and ready to take that next step, the only way they're going to do it is by the ping, is by the article they read, by the podcast they listened to, by the few moments in space and time in which something that was already living inside them, something that was already not satisfactory, and someone served that need automatically awakened in them going, oh, okay, that wasn't a huge change. I can handle, it's an adjustment. It's not completely changing the scope of my life. I was a teacher where it was a absolute 180 point turn. I expected my 3-year-olds to line up. I expected everybody to be quiet. I expected 30-minute circle times. I bore that portion of my life because I didn't understand. Everything I had been taught about early childhood education was that you need to make them ready for school, and this is how you do it. And I had one moment, an extremely influential trainer that my director, honestly, she tossed in the trash after we walked out the door. She did nothing but trash talk her because she went against everything that she knew, which is worksheets are appropriate and 3-year-olds standing in line is perfect and children should be expected to be seen and not heard and sit and listen. And this trainer that she assigned us up for, not knowing what was going to happen, introduced play and why it's important and why children are intrinsically motivated to learn and what happens in the brain when they actually experience something new that they can touch and smell and feel and taste and do all of the things. And it was that one moment, that one interaction that made me go, okay, I've been doing this wrong. Let me look at this. Let me step back. But I have also said I am the one that is absolutely comfortable with change. So when we're looking at the people who are not comfortable with change, which is the majority of the population, they need a whole bunch of little bits to put it all together. And to step outside of that idea that what we're expecting of children in today's day and age, in 2024, when we're shoving pre-K down to infancy, who's building the ladder? Who's building the ladder? We have to, right?
Build a ladder. Look, I could totally build a ladder. I built some ladders in my day. Actual physical ladders. I don't know what kind of ladder you're talking. What kind of ladder you? What do you? What kind of ladder are you talking about? It's a
The thought
metaphorical ladder,
ladder.
right?
It's a metaphorical ladder, absolutely. It's if we're looking at people who are resistant to change, we can't just toss them out of the boat and expect them to swim, right? That's not how it works. I mean, you can toss them, but you have to be in the boat to toss them. They're not going to jump out of the boat and learn how to swim. So if we're looking at how do we bring more of our community to the side of advocacy for children and the right of children to learn the way they're actually designed to learn, we have to give them steps. So we have to build a ladder.
I would flip that around. So we got a boat and a ladder. I would flip that around a little bit though. I think we're not, it's not, it's not about pushing people out of a boat. I think what I'm interested in doing is I'm just rowing along in my little rickety, wooden rowboat, just my little play rowboat, no motor on it at all, anything, just me and the oars. And I'm rowing along, and every once in a while, somebody's like, hey, I'd like to get in that playboat. And I'm like, hey, okay, here's a rope. And then they pull in, and they're all soaping wet, sopping wet, and everything. And then they're in the boat. They're on the team. And then we kind of maybe row my little boat over to a bigger boat where they maybe they hop on the Lisa Murphy boat or the
So, like
Tamar
a Noah's
Jacobson
Ark
boat or.
situation, like
That,
we're just
yeah.
gonna save them one by one. Just
Well, I think that's all you can do. I used to think, I used to think, oh, you can change the profession, but that's bullshit. All you can do is you can change individual people who happen to have some interest, and you can give them ideas, and you can give them support, and you can give them information, but you can't change. I mean, look, if you're a professional bureaucrat or a politician, you can talk bullshit about changing the culture and changing society, but that's all bullshit. That's not the way people change.
No, I can agree with that. That's not how people change. I guess my genuine desire is to find out how you actually curate the masses. How do you actually adjust the scope of a larger sum than your random one?
I don't know that you do, but it's just one here and one there and one there and then another one, and then maybe they've got a coworker that they share a new idea with, and things kind of take root and grow from that. But I don't know if you can do anything else. But I'm grouchy and disheartened, so I got that going against me.
I guess the reason this whole idea came to me was I recently been training a specific series, and it's been very paperwork based, which is not something I generally dive into, but that's just the scope of my work at this particular time. So I am playing my piece, and in all the conversations I'm having with the caregivers and the directors and the program administrators. The second I'm able to actually open the door to real conversation, they're so excited to talk about how do I actually approach this in a real way? How do I actually have growth and conversation? And I'm leaving these trainings and I'm doing this on a very consistent basis, and they are all, not all. I had one very stone-faced the last training I did. I was like, well, I don't know if I'm ever gonna reach you, but I'll try. But genuine conversation, genuine growth, genuine excitement. And I feel like, of course, connection is the point of all of it. Whether you're talking about children or you're talking about full-grown adults, connection is the point in which all the growth happens. And I'm just not ready to give up the goat yet. That you've been doing this longer than I have, Jeff. You're at that point now where you know it.
I'm
You
old.
can only get a few. That's not what I'm saying at all. Stop it. You're only going to get a few here and there. I'm still, with my bedazzled jewels in my eyes, with the idea that I'm going to start some form of movement that's going to change the world and completely fit the script on the way we are. Not we, not childcare bar and grill listeners, but the royal we in early childhood education are stealing the joy from children and stealing their ability to learn and literally morphing them into robots before they enter the school system. And I just have this unbelievably intangible desire to just set it all on fire and just change it. And I guess when I'm looking at how do we approach it, how do we make it happen, how do we actually have a conversation that more people are going to listen to, what are the pieces we need for that? Well, we need to understand, just like children, adults forever evolving, ever
Well,
growing.
I mean, I hope the bus waits to hit me long enough that I can see that become a reality for you and say, yeah, I used to know her when. I look forward to that. Finding people that want to, there people don't. Maybe I'm just grouchy. I know I'm grouchy, but people. Look, the economic principle of, I mean, in economics, they talk about expressed versus observed behaviors. So we have these behaviors that we tell the world, and then we have the things that we really do. So we might tell the world, I mean, I know lots of vegetarians that are very adamant about how vegetarian-y they are, who regularly eat chicken and steak. But I'm still a vegetarian. So, and my experience is that there are a lot of people out there in the early learning profession who talk a good game about wanting to create playful environments and wanting to really support children in their social emotional development. And really their observed behavior is that they don't want those things. Otherwise, they wouldn't be doing things day in and day out the way they're doing them. And my conscious bias is that the profession is filled with so many of those people picking out the individuals who really want to change in a positive way, like you did, and like you're talking about supporting. I don't know. I don't know how to find them. I mean, maybe there needs to be a secret handshake, but then they wouldn't know. If they already knew the secret handshake, they'd already be in the rowboat. So I don't know how that happens.
Okay, so everything you just said kind of lit some bulbs for me. This is very real. This is very true. I feel that there's like we brought them across the bridge and then we left them at the gate. So we start the conversation, we get them excited. They're like, "Oh, yes, I want to change. Yes, I want to grow. Yes, I want to do these things. Training's over. Bye. Here's your certificate. Have a good time." And there's nothing to continue the growth. So they sit back in the, and they go back to the program that they're in where nobody else is agreeing or very few of them are agreeing. And now they're wondering if they were crazy or if, you know, that trainer was just a little cuckoo. That's me. And they just start to dissuade themselves from the idea that they could grow, from the idea that they could do more, from the idea that something real happened, and it just fades back into the distance. And all of that growth, even if it was just for a few short hours, all of that brain opening, endorphin filling possibility just gets shut right back down because they go back into the, this is where I'm safe, this is where I know, this is my creature habit. I know I have a job. I know I'm getting paid. I can barely pay. I can barely feed my kids. I don't have time to rock the boat.
Oh, yes, and even more than that, just the day-to-dayness of life. Look, I talk about this in just about every online training I do, and in person. Hey, maybe you walk away from this training with a good idea and a little bit of energy about making changes. And the reality is, by the time you're out in the parking lot or the time you've logged off of Zoom, real life is going to smack you in the face, and you're going to have other obligations and other needs and things to deal with, and that it's really unlikely that you're going to follow through on any of those changes just because life is busy. But if you want to, here's resources I've got for you. And I share the websites and I share my email, and I hear from a very, very small number of people because life is busy and people are just reluctant to change. But then every once in a while, this happened a couple of weeks ago. I can't even remember which training I was doing, but I'm talking about the fact that, you know, young children need to move because sensory integration, getting those eight sensory systems wired up with the brain, is the foundation for all the stuff we want to do later on. And 3-year-olds don't need to be sedentary, and they don't need to be sitting crisscross applesauce. And afterwards, I heard from one of the participants that she'd never really thought about it that way. And she'd been in the profession for 20 years and had never thought about this need to move. And I shared some stuff that she could read and gave her some resources, and maybe she will change up her practice, and maybe she won't. And maybe I'll hear from her again, and maybe I won't. And maybe she'll pass that information on to somebody else, and maybe she won't. But what I've got going for me is there's that moment where one person out of this group had that spark you're talking about. I don't think we can find that with everybody because everybody doesn't have it or doesn't have it about this topic or something. I don't know. And I hate sounding like a downer about this, but it's just 20 plus years. It's just been kind of the lived experience.
I don't think you're unrealistic in that. I mean, you're very realistic. You're very you have very tangible experiences to put behind those statements. I am not discounting that in any way, shape, or form, and I actually agree with you. I know my hope is way too big to ever be achieved. I'm just hoping, like, how do I start? I mean, if we're gonna I'm probably going to pull some red flags here, but if we're going to talk about big movements that have happened in the last decade or not even decade, last 5, 6 years, we had the Me Too movement. We had the Black Lives Matter movement. We had all of these big uprisings, right? Where everybody was
Yeah,
ready to make.
not everybody,
No, not
not yet.
everybody. Not everybody. Let me correct my statement there. A large mass of people who were concentrated on the same idea kind of rose to a specific occasion, but none of them knew what they were doing. None of them had any real goal in mind. They just kind of did it.
Yeah, I would even argue most of them didn't even have any buy-in. They changed their picture on social media, and then they walked away and they felt good about themselves.
Yes.
Very,
Okay.
very surface level.
You're
So
right.
even
It
those
was
big
very surface
movements
level.
weren't big movements.
They weren't. You know, I realized I actually didn't have any point in making that point. Because if I'm looking at it, you are 100% correct.
I'm
It
such a
was
dick.
nothing but a show of face.
If you're looking for practical thing, you've got this idea and you want to move forward with this, and I applaud that. I'm glad there are people out there that aren't as jaded as I am, and I like that energy. Can I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
You got to get the metaphor figured out because we've talked about boats and gates and bridges and ladders, and I think the messaging needs to be a little bit more consistent. I don't know if we're building a ladder to the boat and then going through the gate and then across the bridge, or
Well, thank you for pointing that out on air, Jeff. I do need to work on my metaphor. No, I've always been somebody who is prone to using metaphors in my attempt to clarify a statement and to make understanding well known in a group. And you made it very clear that I obviously, and I have to do it
look, I'm a
because I'm
big
a
fan of
punny
a mixed
person.
metaphor.
I did not cross that bridge. So
I
there's
was
that.
halfway across the bridge, and then I climbed down a ladder into the boat, and we rowed to shore and went into the gate of play.
Yes, pretty much that's what happened. Welcome to my brain. There's a reason none of them make sense.
Hey, I'm going to call somebody out. Some people who listen to this podcast also listen to that early childhood nerd podcast, which I'm happy and proud to produce and put out into the world for Heather. But Heather, I guess there's been some rumblings over there that people want to get together and do some sort of nerd conference or something, and she's like, oh, she's not ready for that, and she's not brave enough, she says. And I told her a little bit ago that she should do it and bask in the back in the bask in the warm glow of the community she's created, and that's kind of what you're kind of wanting to do too. Is it sounds like you're wanting to build a community and make connections and do that kind of stuff, or am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong at all. That's absolutely what I want to do. I'm gonna sound like Heather for a minute. Heather, I feel you. We're buds in this moment. I feel a little stymied, because of my current situation, work-wise, that I have this beautiful dream, and it could be really good and really great, and I'm not only scared. But I also got to pay my bills. So
Sure.
I'm trying to keep myself in this relative safe space of
Sure.
I can still speak my mind to an extent and pay my bills to an extent because 2024 and inflation's awesome.
That's not my understanding. I've been told by experts that the economy is great, and that you know, no experts.
Okay,
What?
never mind. I'm gonna go ahead and embrace that as satire and sarcasm.
I mean, you read anything put out by the White House, and they're going to tell you the economy is doing fine, and it's just your imagination that that grocery prices are higher than you remember them being. So I think you need to get in line with the narrative. So there's that. So what's your first step going to be? You're gonna start your own podcast? You're gonna write a book? You're gonna
Well,
make picket signs?
picket signs, I don't have enough time for that. I have started a book. I am nowhere close to finishing it. I have posited the idea with a very close early childhood educator lover friend of mine that we are talking about the idea of just saying, just do it. Her phrase for the year is "Do it afraid." So she's going to listen to this podcast. Hey, I said it for you. Do it afraid. Even when you're scared, do it anyway. And we're talking about going ahead and just ripping off the Band-Aid and starting with the podcast, starting with our content that she is the ultimate creator of. I'm not going to lie. Can I create content? Yes. But she's a wizard and she does it so much better. So we're going to kind of collaborate and kind of try to go from there, but we're still waiting on the groundwork for that, which is why I am still just trying to figure it out and what's going to be next.
Yeah, I think that's all of us can do. And look, listeners, I know I sound dour and grouchy, but actually, I've been thinking about how what kind of resources we can build over the Playvolution HQ website to help people do the scary thing. Coming up in I don't know how many episodes, a while. It's on the calendar. I'm going to talk with Rebecca. Is that who I'm talking with? And Carol, I think, and anybody else that showed up. I shared the link over at the My Playhaven site. Anybody wants to show up for that recording session? By the time you hear this, it's probably too late. But you know, you were invited. If you went over there, if you were over there already, you'd already know. So that's going on. So because it is hard to do the scary thing, and having some resources for that. Because look, I don't think we can get everybody on board for making change, but when those people do have that sparkle in their eye, I want to have some stuff that we can point them to. And I'm lucky enough on this show to have contact with lots of people like Sally here who are out there doing their own thing and starting their, I mean, they're bringing their own vision of what early learning should be like into the world. And that's kind of cool. And it feels good to bump up against their ideas and experiences. Any final thoughts before we wrap this up?
Head on over to Playhaven because we need more input. Jeff's always posting stuff that could really use some eyes and some ideas, and I often check in over there and find out that there's a lot of great stuff happening. So take some time, hop on over.
Yeah,
It's
I
fun
mean, Jeff
stuff.
could be on social media, but again, Jeff is basically a hermit. To wrap this episode up, earlier when I was talking about the demise of my computer, Sally here thought I was going to say something sad about one of the dogs, and so I'll just throw a sad thing about one of the dogs out here. I don't think I've talked about it on the podcast. Slinky Dog's got the cancer. Slinky Dog is he's half lab, half boxer, and apparently boxers are prone to getting tumors. And when we adopted him a little bit after we adopted him, he got a little tumor on his nose that we had removed. And the vet was like, "Yeah, he's gonna fill up with them, and that's how he's gonna die, because that's just what happens with boxers." So he's got I can feel one on his neck when I rub his neck, and the thing is, I was talking to another guy who used to have a boxer, and he can do the surgeries and everything, but then they're going under anesthesia and they don't know what the fuck's going on, and they get better. So he said if he had to do over again, he just wouldn't have had the surgeries. He just would have enjoyed the time they had. So nobody knows how much time Slinky Dog's got left. So there, maybe Jeff will actually cry. Something to look forward to.
Oh my goodness.
What?
No, it's just so sad. I mean, I was playing with my dog in the backyard earlier, and I know he's not gonna, but he's probably not gonna make it till my youngest is high school age, because he's already 5, and it breaks my heart because he's my little land dolphin. So I'm sad for Slinky.
Yeah,
Go let
well,
him like smell some
he's
dead
laying on the
fish.
couch snoring now. Yeah. So, listeners, you got that to look forward to future episode, Jeff bawling about his puppy passing away, and then a couple episodes later, being happy about his new puppy. That's, but you just move on. That's all you can do is life, and life is move on. This is kind of a downer way to end the episode, huh?
Yeah, like no, let's have a uplifting
Okay,
moment,
go
please,
ahead. Go ahead.
because I don't even know. What's an uplifting moment? Have you heard anything more about your possible at the beach in person?
Oh no,
There
that's
were
never
so
gonna
many
happen.
acronyms. It's never gonna happen.
Yeah, no, there's not
Okay,
enough people interested in
so
doing
what
that.
is gonna happen is I'm gonna start my podcast. I'm gonna create my own like Uncon Con,
Sure.
and you and Tasha.
Nah, probably
No.
not.
What if we're like in a beach nearby? Just
I
too
don't
many
know.
people. It's
No.
too people-y for
Just don't like
you.
to leave. Don't like to leave home. We can end with this. I'm not supposed to talk about, I don't think I'm supposed to talk about it. Recently started a sticker chart for Tasha. It's more like a sticker post. It's more like a sticker canvas. I don't know if I'm supposed to talk about it, so that's all I'm going to say. But it was her idea. It's her idea. This has been the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast, the world's longest running and most prolific early learning podcast, where we talk about early childhood stuff and other stuff. And so there's that. And like I say, longest running, most prolific, not necessarily good. Thanks for listening. Back soon. Bye bye.
Bye.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.
Oh.